Hello, everyone. I'm Kevin Winder, and thanks for tuning in to Beyond Everything Radio. And guess what? I have another question for you. What does it mean to subvert death? Subversion literally means to turn from beneath or to undermine authority. Subversion is a transfer of power that doesn't come by might, but by another kind of power. And so often the Easter story is reduced to an appeal of historical data. This limits the Easter story to a cleanup job for our naughtiness. In this week's broadcast, I'll offer a much bigger Easter story and prove that subversion, everywhere we see it, is the ongoing effect of dying in order to find new life. Join me now as we learn to see the resurrection beyond everything. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another broadcast of Beyond Everything Radio. I'm Kevin Winder, online pastor, author, and uncoach. So glad that you're here. Welcome to another broadcast and welcome to Sunday. You know, I love the feedback I'm getting from so many of you about this series. I think you're realizing that I'm opening up a much bigger story that is certainly impossible to cram into one 30-minute program. So this is why we're doing a big series, and I'm so glad that you're here. If you haven't tuned in, or if this is your first time, you are in for something, I think, that's a little bit different. You will have to put on your thinking caps. We are going to go into the deep end of the pool, so you will have to throw on your floaties. But in the end, you're going to go away with something that I think is truly transformative and helpful and definitely inspiring. Today we are on part four, and the title of our talk today is called Subverting Death. Subverting Death. By the way, if you do want to engage with me, ask me a question about anything you hear, I would love to hear from you and I would love to dialogue with you. That's the easiest way to do that is for you to go online to kevinwinder.com. Remember, I spell my name like the number seven, K-E-V-E-N, kevinwinder.com. Go to Winder's Windshield and sign up today. That will give you access to our weekly newsletter that puts out all the content and information. And it also has a way for you to email me directly. Just reply, and we can start our conversation. I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to hear your feedback. Keep it all coming, folks. And go to Winder's Windshield. Sign up today at kevinwinder.com. Okay, so back to subverting death. You know, this broadcast was supposed to air on Easter, and I'm actually glad that it didn't. You know, by now, the Easter buzz has kind of worn off, and people are getting on with spring and, you know, the season of new life. And this series is a long view of how we do life. You see, we miss life by the micro deaths that put us to sleep. You know, and my purpose in this radio program and in my life is to wake people up from the anesthesia that oppresses us. Right, so many people go through life and it's not fun. It's depressing. It's hurtful. It's a painful experience, and they don't understand that it's because they are asleep. And for this, I can't think of any better metaphor than the resurrection, to rise up from the dead, to be called out like Lazarus from a tomb, from a prison. Right, this is the work of the gospel. Now, right now, at least last couple weeks, pastors and teachers have been feverishly defending the historical death and resurrection of Jesus. And they're telling us that it's the backbone of Christianity. And Paul agrees in 1 Corinthians 15, verses 19 through 20, where he says, if the resurrection doesn't exist, we of all people are to be pitied. But by now, we either believe in the resurrection, that it really did happen, or we still have our doubts. And there's really very little more that can be added to the discussion, so long as the goal of Easter is historical proof, right? I mean, we can only go back to so much data. And after the data, it's up to us to either believe or not believe. And data itself doesn't really transform us. Data doesn't really help us. It kind of helps the cause of trying to prove that Christianity could be true. And in our scientific world, with all the scientific minds that are out there, That's how most church is done. We try and win a battle in the mind to get you to believe. And while I don't disagree that sometimes that's an important aspect, I think we could do better. I mean, here we are 2,000 years later, and the goal of Easter is still proof? I mean, quite honestly, that makes me a little bit sad. I mean, our world is asking, why should I care about Easter? And we're saying, because of the data. I mean, which begs the question to me as to whether we really, especially as the church, understand the message and the mission of Jesus any better than his contemporaries did. I mean, of all the sermons I've heard about Easter, 95% of them or more have been focused on a post-death benefit, meaning that one day it'll all pay off after you die. And of course, this always comes with strings attached, and it's the subplot that's the problem, right? Join Jesus' team, avoid where prohibited. Right, it's the Easter subplot that has become a threat. I mean, is that really the best we can do? Is data and threat? I mean, join Jesus' team or else. Now, come on, folks. I'm here not to poke holes in this. I'm just trying to elevate our consciousness to say, is this really the best that we can do? I mean, is this really all we can do is retell the Passion story? I'm not saying it's bad. I think it's important. It's an important story. Do I believe it's historically true? Yes, but that's not the point. Is the goal of Easter really all about substitutionary atonement? Now, I know that's going to kind of clink in some of your thinking. Was the death of Jesus merely fire insurance? Was it to just get people to join the team and avoid hell? Is the gospel reduced to just naughtiness shampoo? Remember the shampoo process of wash, sin, repeat, wash, sin, repeat? Is that the greatest hope of the Christian faith? Now, if the death of Jesus is any of those things, and I'm not saying that it's not, but if it is substitutionary atonement, if it is fire insurance, if it is naughtiness shampoo, then the very existence of the death and resurrection of Jesus is that it is the end of appeasement. And appeasement is simply low-level religion where you try and make God happy or not mad at you anymore. And if all those things are true, then it is definitely the end of low-level religion. But that begs the question, why do we keep going back to the papier-mâché rock for our Easter play? I mean, is it the voice of our institutional tradition? Are we just saying, well, this is what we do every Easter? We've always done this every Easter. I went to a church years ago where I was on staff, and all they ever did was put the choir into a big cross shape, and it was always the Easter living cross. That was all they ever did. I've been to Easter plays and performances where they had live animals. I've seen everything under the sun, the papier-mâché rock, the dry ice, the fog machine, the lightning, the thunder, the animals, the costumes, the whole bit. But Easter seems to be another voice saying, he's not there, he's risen. It seems like we're all looking in the same place, not unlike the people who came to Jesus' tomb. Saying, where is he? He's not there. He's risen. There's another voice out there. And my question is, could the Easter attraction actually be a distraction? And I think so. And I asked the question in a previous blog, and if you read this online, you'll see a link to my post that asks the question, is the atonement open for discussion? Now, my point today is not, again, to pick holes with your Easter experience. I know that many of us hold these traditions near and dear to our heart, but historical data is not the big story of Easter. I mean, what if Jesus' purpose goes beyond bussing our table of sin? I mean, Jesus says his purpose is to bear witness to the truth in John 18:37. I mean, he goes on to say that everyone who is of the truth listens to his voice. And last week I showed how this voice, this phoné, is that which awakens us from anesthesia, right? This changes the Easter message from sin management to consciousness of the truth. Consciousness of the truth might actually be the bigger Easter story. I mean, Easter is Jesus' story of subversion, which begins and not ends with death. There was never a doubt in Jesus' mind that bearing witness to the truth would get him killed. I mean, we saw that in the earlier episodes of this series, right? This forerunner of subversion with John the Baptist. And both he and Jesus were killed for it. Awake people are always very disruptive. The herd tries to kill the strays that it can't reabsorb. Think about that. I mean, we might think that subverting death means we avoid it, but Jesus reveals a new path that we actually go through it to subvert it. And so the resurrection of Easter is proved by our waking up in an exile. And this is why my blog is called Thrive in Exile. All new life begins in exile, where we are detached, isolated, uncertain, but free. Institutions, they train us, they educate us, but unfortunately, they try and contain us. And death is that final institution of all humanity. And the idea is that death is going to contain us forever, locked in the earth. Now, institutional power needs people, needs all of us to survive. We know that, right? Institutions look out for themselves and they thrive on assimilation. They're always turning outies into innies, and they need to because that's how growth takes place. I mean, they gain power by turning all the outsiders into insiders. And each institution offers us a version of ourself. It's a mold into which we are pressed, you know, and Romans 12:2 says, you know, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And so this is the whole idea. This is the metaphor in scripture, is that institutions try and conform you, to shape you. They give you an identity. You know, Jesus was no different. He saw all the molds, but he would not be conformed by them. And molds and ultimately tombs could not contain him. This is a great illustration of a model of what we might aspire to. Now, while he participated in institutions, he never abided in them. He was in but not of the institutions. He went through, he transcended his family, his friends, his community, his religion, and his government. And the end result was that he had to do so at a very high price. And that's the same for us. And so the Easter story actually reveals our last institution is death itself. I mean, death demands mandatory compliance. Colossians 1:18 says that Christ is the firstborn from the dead. Now, this doesn't mean that he was the first to rise from the dead. And I mean, even in the Gospels, we see stories of Jairus' daughter and Lazarus and others that were raised from the dead. So if anybody was the first to be raised from the dead, it's one of those. And so that's not what Colossians is saying. What he's saying is that Christ is superior to the institution of death. He subverts death. This means that the following, you know, that when we follow Christ, it means we are willing to die for the truth. Because remember, that is his purpose. His purpose was to bear witness to the truth. And if we are to follow, then we also will bear witness to the truth. And that's what Matthew 16:24 says. It says, take up your cross and follow me. You're going to have to be willing to die. The Easter story is that place where you're willing to go to the place of exile because of the truth that's within you. And the promise of Easter is that that death itself cannot hold us. You see, resurrection subverts death. Rising up, or resurrection, is how we regain power, right? That's the transfer of power. That's why it's subversive. So going through and then rising up is the path of subversion. And we're going to go into this in greater detail, and we're going to repeat this theme in the coming weeks as part of this series. But going through and rising up is the path and the power of subversion. So when the gospel frees the captive, what it does is it actually juxtaposes us within our institutions as a dissident. And the herd, of course, will always lash out at you. I mean, the greater the institutional power, like if it's a government, the more likely it will to criminalize our independence from it. And in Jesus' case, neither the church nor state could tolerate such a stray. But the irony here is that neither could accept the possibility that Jesus was actually telling the truth. I mean, it's not like he standed before the Sanhedrin and said, "Yes, I'm the Messiah." And they said, "Okay, maybe we should believe you." No. They instantly called blasphemy and said, "We need to have you crucified." You see, we can subvert through rebellion or through transcending. And rebellion gives us none of the benefit that going through and rising up does. We'll see that more in coming episodes. So Easter is more than naughtiness shampoo. You see where I'm coming from now? It's the living drama of healthy subversion. And it's retold in our lives each and every single day. Easter is the dying process on our way to death. I mean, we each die every time we make a concession or trade authenticity for the groupthink. Have you ever considered that? Do you feel that on the inside when you just say, "God, I don't really want to go along with this, but man, that's what everybody's doing, so I guess I do." Or, "I don't want to lose my job. I don't want to have to go looking for a new thing. I don't want to have to leave my church. I don't want to have to lose my friends." So, you know, we die every time we make these concessions. We trade our authenticity for the groupthink. You see, we also die alone out on a hill after the herd vilifies us. They relegate us to the sidelines. If you refuse to make that concession, you'll also die, but you'll die out, relegated to the exile. And so the Easter resurrection is going through and rising up to new life after each of these little deaths that take place. And so we're dying and resurrecting throughout life, and it's the growth process. So Easter is not only the dying process on our way to death, it's the living process on our way to life. And when we would rather be penniless, alone, forsaken, or relegated to the sidelines than to lose ourselves in some pseudonym given by an institution, then, and only then, can we say that we've been raised from the dead. I mean, if we trade in our true self for the surrogate that's offered by the safety of the masses, or if we really believe the Kool-Aid of the climbers, then it means our faith has not taken us very far. I mean, if our faith is not the power to free us from the small cages and prisons and tombs of life, what makes us think we will be delivered from the ultimate cage or tomb of death? That's a very sobering question. So let's examine the institutions of our life. Our captivity in them determines whether Easter has had any power for us at all. And following our forerunner means we will too also subvert death and every other institution. But it's not going to happen by avoidance. It's not going to happen by rebellion. It's only going to happen by going through and rising up. And that, my friend, if you can identify that pattern, is Easter. Easter is not only the historical data that we are able to obtain and find, but that is sterile and it doesn't touch us. It doesn't mean that much to us. But the moment you realize that whatever you're going through, whatever institution you're facing, whether it's with your family, whether it's with your friends, or whether it's in your church community, perhaps it's with the government, maybe it's with your employer, whatever it is, that institution is trying to press you into a mold, to make you like itself, to complete the assimilation process of turning you as an outsider into an insider. And at some point, you recognize that it's a pseudonym it's trying to give you. You recognize that it's not really who you want to be. It's not really who you really are. It's not your true self. It's not your true name. And so when you push back you know that the institution is not happy. And at first it tries to lull you back in. At first it tries to convince you of your mistake, correct you, and lead you back in. But if you don't come, it starts to relegate you to the sidelines. It starts to push you away. It starts to devalue you, discredit you, call you a dissenter, a malcontent, a rebel, and whatever name it can possibly give you. And the more power that institution has, the more it will yield that power to hurt you and to ultimately kill you. And if it can't kill you physically, trust me, it will kill you financially. It'll kill you socially. It'll kill you in some other way. And you'll find yourself outside if you hold strong to that voice that's calling you out. This, my friend, is what the gospel does. And this is what Easter is. And when you go through that and you rise up to new life, you are a living example of Easter. And you can look around the world and you can see living examples of Easter each and every day, in each and every corner of the world, in each and every place, in each and every person. And so the Easter story moves out of data and it moves into this living story being retold each and every day within our lives. And so the Easter story is not a historical story anymore. It's your story. It's my story. Now that is an Easter message we can all celebrate. Greetings, everyone. I'm Kevin Winder from Beyond Everything Radio, and I really want to encourage you to go to my website right now and sign up for Winder's Windshield. That's my weekly newsletter, and you can find it at kevinwinder.com. When you sign up, you'll join all the others in the virtual space. Each Sunday morning, you'll get a link to my blog, my radio program, and my podcast. You'll be the first to access new content, uncoaching opportunities, and webinars, and so much more. Sign up now, and you'll get a free e-version of my book, Getting Better When You Can't. Now, go to kevinwinder.com, and remember, I spell Kevin like the number 7. Go to kevinwinder.com and look for Winder's Windshield and sign up today. Hi, everyone. I'm Kevin Winder from Beyond Everything Radio. You know, making lasting change is really hard. And if you've tried but failed to change a habit or a compulsive behavior, then you know what I mean. And I want you to know you're in good company. In my book, Getting Better When You Can't, I deconstruct the mechanics of behavior. And so when your willpower or motivation or inspiration isn't enough, or when therapy, brain science, or religious guilt just didn't cut it, why not try wisdom? I offer a centuries-old approach to personal change that was 10 years in the making from countless hours of coaching. Go and get Getting Better When You Can't. Get it today. You can download it immediately on iBooks or Kindle if you want, or if you'd like a hard copy or the audio CD, just get it from my website at kevinwinder.com. Look for Getting Better When You Can't. Hi, it's Kevin Winder, and did you know coaching is not just for athletic performance anymore? The world is learning how we learn from one another, and life coaching is at the center of this transformation. We used to just call it pastoral care, but now coaching is multidimensional. Did you realize that 90% of coaching operates on the principle that if you are able to do more, accomplish more, or have more, then you will get to be more? Well, that's why I'm the uncoach. Contrary to the world, our doing doesn't create our being. Instead, it's our being that creates our doing. Uncoaching is then counterintuitive. You can always have anything you think you want by ascending or climbing or striving, but you can only have what you really want by first descending, emptying, and waking up to who you really are. So if your life is stuck, plateaued, or just really confusing, then contact me today. I never charge for coaching, but I have a limited amount of space. So if you want to go deeper for the sake of rising up, then contact me, the uncoach, at kevinwinder.com.